Mazzara and Parra project to Amimora. Herrera, Cabrera, don't let the Bay that scare ya. Machado, Urbano, or no.
Today on the Fantasy Baseball Today podcast, get to know one of the most enigmatic, mysterious men in the fantasy industry. Ladies and gentlemen, it's the Scott White Show.
Is that how I'm perceived as, I can't even say the word, enigmatic and mysterious?
I don't know. I just, I don't know. I don't know that people know that much about your life, Scott.
Oh, okay.
You're not as out there as, certainly like me and Heath. You know?
Yeah, yeah. Well, yeah, we like to pry into your life a little bit.
Yeah, yeah.
I don't know what Heath's issue is.
Well,
he volunteers all the stuff.
Heath just likes to talk. We have a surprise segment coming up called Ask Scott Anything. I solicited the Twitterverse for some Scott White questions. Now, most of them are about fantasy baseball, but some of them are a little bit more fun, like your favorite movie snacks and, baby name recommendations for one person. So we'll get into Scott White a little bit later. I hope you're excited.
Oh boy.
Yeah. Now
I'm a little scared, but
I made sure it was nothing scary. Now, the most added player in CBSSports.com leagues may have just gotten even more addier as Miguel Montero has a little bit of a knee injury and every Met is injured. But let's start with this. Here's a trivia question.
Okay.
Which pitching category does Chris Archer lead Major League Baseball in?
I'm gonna say walks per nine.
Losses
would be the correct answer. Okay.
Yeah. Not a pitching category that most people think about.
No.
Yeah. He's 4-10.
And that makes sense because his last seven starts, he's lost six of them. Which is bad.
Yeah.
But, I mean, here's the thing about Archer. He has been consistently mediocre in terms of how many runs he gives up, how many base runners he allows. And that would be okay on some teams. I just don't know that the Rays score enough run to sustain him like that. But the other thing he's been consistent at is strikeouts. He's on pace for 250 of those, and I can't recall a time a pitcher even had 200 strikeouts, much less 250, and wasn't a fantasy mainstay. There may be somebody I'm forgetting, but still, I mean, we're talking 200 versus 250 in that scenario.
Yeah, right.
He's so good at the strikeouts that if there's any kind of regression that happens with anything else, be it ERA or WHIP or wins, just one of them, I think he's back to being a must-start in fantasy. And at least in categories leagues, roto leagues, he may be there already just because of the strikeouts.
Well, the strikeouts are good, but the ERA right now is 4.70. The WHIP is 1.435, and the record is terrible. So I'm not sure I agree with that. But, you know, he's given up a lot of home runs. He's doubling his home run per nine from last year, 1.6 per nine right now. First inning ERA is terrible for Chris Archer. Kevin Cash thinks that the problem is his inability to get ahead in the count. Archer's pitching behind in the count a lot. Guys are squaring it up. Guys are hitting it hard. But it does seem like every time he starts a game, there's something positive in there. It's like, it's not all bad, you know? He's certainly not James Shields. He gave up three runs in the first inning, and then he calmed down and he pitched pretty well after that. So maybe Archer is going to turn a corner like you seem to be implying.
I mean, during this 1-6 stretch, he has only once given up more than four earned runs.
Right.
You know?
Right.
Like, there have been very few disaster starts in there, but the Rays offense never bails him out, so he can win just one of those mess starts.
Yeah. Look what Kluber and Bauer did to the Rays the last two games. Without Steve Pierce, this is a really, really bad offense. And it's not just Steve Pierce. Brandon Guyer's out. Not like Kevin Kiermaier is so good, but he's out. Mikey Matsuk's out there. So they're just really depleted right now. More on Bauer in just a little bit. Scott, I want to ask you. Now, yesterday was like the injury day. It was just terrible. Two Rangers pitchers going on the DL. Syndergaard, Cespedes, they're hurt. Sabathia, John Gray, they're a little banged up. Rizzo left with accident. So we'll get to all that crazy stuff, but which performers stood out to you in Wednesday's action?
Well, the performer would probably be Trevor Bauer, the biggest. And then a hitter, maybe Stephen Moy hitting the two home runs.
Oh, yeah.
Look, those are the same two standouts you picked.
Steal my standouts.
I know.
That's fine.
Okay.
Ask Scott anything.
Why you pick somebody different?
Why are you such a thief, Scott White?
Well, that's the first thing you're going to find out about me. I'm a thief. I moonlight as a thief.
I guess it was a little obvious there. But all right, who do you want to go with first, Bauer or Moya?
Let's go Bauer.
Bauer it is.
Bauer hour.
How about complete game, 3-hitter, 1 run, 1 walk, 10 strikeouts. Last 4 starts, Trevor Bauer's 2-0 with a 1.42 ERA. 6 walks, 32 strikeouts, surprisingly only 10% swinging strikes, but a lot of ground balls, and 7 or more innings in each start.
Yeah, and the ground ball thing is the game changer for me, because that is such an improvement from last year, how many more ground balls he's getting, that it's cut his home run rate in half, basically. The walk rate's down a little bit, too. So he's been more efficient, able to pitch deeper into games, able to get a higher strikeout total, and obviously not getting burned so much in ERA. I just think he's done exactly what he's improved in the most verifiable way, I guess, from one season to a next, that makes it easy to buy into this is a genuine breakthrough from him. And with as much strikeout potential as he possesses, and 9 strikeouts or more in 3 of those last 4 starts, it's getting awfully hard to sit him, even in a 1-start week.
Bauer is 80% owned. So I'm going to ask you some tough ones here. Who would you rather own rest of the season, Trevor Bauer or Adam Wainwright?
I will still take Wainwright.
Boo!
Yeah, well... Sorry, he's been really good too.
he hasn't been even close to this good. I mean, that's the thing about Wainwright is, when does he deliver a start like this? A good start for him is like 7 innings, 3 runs.
Okay, but his numbers in his last 7 starts are like 2.70 ERA, WHIP barely over 1. Basically, retro Wainwright, and retro Wainwright was obviously a must start. So,
all right.
Yeah, fine. Not as much strikeout potential as Bauer, but I think there will be more consistency going forward from Wainwright.
Bauer or Stroman?
I will take Bauer at this point.
Bauer or McCullers?
Bauer.
Okay. More on McCullers later. How about, oh, Moya, oh, Boya. He's got, in 5 games since being recalled, Stephen Moya, 20% owned, is 8-for-21 with 3 home runs, 2 of them yesterday. Still no walks, 5 strikeouts, and on the season, only 1 walk and 15 strikeouts in 14 games.
Yeah. Well, that's a problem. We know he has power. He had a season where he hit right around 35 home runs in the minors, and he had, I think, 13 in 205 at-bats before getting called up this year. But he walks so infrequently that I'm always going to be skeptical of that skill set. Obviously, there are some that have overcome it. Matt Kemp has this year. Adam Jones has made a whole career out of it. Hitting more home runs than drawing walks, basically. But it's a rare thing to do. I think it's going to take like a couple months of this from Moya for me to buy into it from a mixed league perspective.
A couple
and
months,
obviously. Yeah. That's unless he goes on like a Trevor Story type run. But how uncommon are those?
Well, so, I mean, look, he could go on an Adam Duvall type run. Adam Duvall never walks.
Yeah, and I guess I did get to the point where I was picking up Adam Duvall, but. I would have been happy to take whatever anybody could have offered him for me too, and look at what's happened since he went on that run, you know.
Well, he's still been okay, hasn't he?
Let's look it up.
He's certainly not, you know, red hot anymore, but I feel like Duvall has still been worth starting in like a roto league, and I am starting Stephen Moya in my JD Martinez league because it was just tough to find outfielders. Like, the best outfielders available when I picked up Moya were Jason Wirth and Kevin Pillar. And to be quite honest, I think I picked up all 3 of them. But you know, there's some leagues where it's tough to find outfielders, and maybe Moya's a guy who can get you some power, and hooray.
Yeah, but I would have to be deeper than that league you're referring to, because I definitely take Worth over him. I'd take, like, Melky Cabrera over him.
Oh, you would? Well, what, yeah. The batting average?
Yeah, batting average. I mean, Melky's on pace for 16 home runs. It's not like he's garbage.
Well, let me do some quick obnoxious math here. let's see. Steven Moya's on pace for over 30, like 32 home runs. Tough guy. by the way, Duvall's okay. Hitting pretty well still.
Yeah. Well, I mean...
and he walked twice. He walked twice yesterday. Oh my god!
Since that home run binge ended for last 14 games, he's batting .216, and he actually has three home runs during that stretch.
Yeah.
But I don't know. I don't know. Even the Duvall case, having 20 home runs and 236 at bats, I'm going to say is pretty rare, and I would bet against Moya doing that.
Well, a guy who doesn't walk often struggles, like Jerks and Profar. When he was red hot, he wasn't walking and. You know, he's been fine, but not as good as he was before. I think it's time now to talk about the news, and I can't remember a show in recently or at all this year that had this many injuries, news, and notes, so this is just part one of it. First of all, the Miami Herald reported that the Marlins in 2012, when they traded Jose Reyes and Mark Burley and they had their fire sale, they chose Justin Nicolino over Noah Syndergaard and Aaron Sanchez. They had the option. Pick one of those three. Syndergaard, Sanchez, Nicolino. Marlon said, give me Nicolino.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, oops.
Wow. I mean, they have... Chris Towers has been... Chris Towers, being a Marlins fan, of course, has been harping on this for... Ever since the Marlins traded Andrew Heaney in that three-team deal that landed Howie Kendrick with the Dodgers... they could have given up Justin Nicolino in that deal, but they chose to give up Heaney instead, which may not seem like that big of a deal because Heaney hasn't amounted to much. But this is even more of a jaw dropper.
Yeah, this is bad. But however,
they really like Nicolino.
But it does transition us into Noah Syndergaard, who for the second time this season has had a little bit of an elbow issue. And once again, It doesn't seem like a big deal. There's no structural damage, but. You know, remember, he was the one guy I wasn't drafting because I was worried about an injury or just bad performance. How are you feeling now?
I think, obviously, you're talking about a pattern here now because it is the second time, which is more worrisome than an isolated event. And I think whether it's him actually suffering an injury or just the Mets being proactive preventing an injury, I think it's reasonable to wonder if he's going to be available to us during the most critical point of the season. I might certainly not right now before he's taken the mound again, but if he comes back, makes a couple normal Syndergaard starts, I might try and swap him at that point. And I'd be talking an ace for ace exchange, like a David Price, or maybe somebody perceived to be risky, like a Steven Strasburg. I don't think Strasburg is so risky anymore. I might do something like that and just let that be somebody else's potential problem.
So if somebody offers you a Noah Syndergaard trade right now, you're probably not taking it, unless it's just a steal.
Well, if they offer it to me right now, I'm assuming it would be a low ball offer, and no, I'm not going to lowball Syndergaard.
Right. Okay, yeah. So let's keep an eye on that. Zach Wheeler has no structural damage in his elbow. Yoenis Cespedes left yesterday's game with wrist discomfort, which makes Matt Wisler pretty interesting in FanDuel tonight because if you just play the night slate, it's very challenging, and we'll talk about that in a bit. Bartolo Colon expected to make his next start despite a bruised thumb. Now, there were news and notes outside of New York. And, for example, Taijuan Walker is not going to start this week but will likely avoid the DL. In Texas, Derek Holland's on the DL with shoulder inflammation, and Colby Lewis is out up to 2 months with a strained lat. So we're looking at A.J. Griffin, who should be coming back soon, like this weekend. Nick Martinez is in the rotation. Kyle Loesch, Chichi Gonzalez, they are options.
They are?
According to what I read.
Okay.
But, you know, Griffin is somewhat interesting because he was actually pitching pretty well, if I recall, before going on the DL. Nice curveball.
Yeah, he was. I think we were all pretty skeptical of it because, and granted, it had been several years since he had pitched in the majors at all. But when he last had, he was home run prone. And I still think that could be a problem for him. It hadn't quite manifested to the level it did in his A's days, but obviously pitching in a more of a hitter-friendly park now. And not enough swing and miss potential, really, I think, to make up for it. So I see him as being more of an AL-only option. I'd have to be pretty desperate to go for him in mixed league.
Marco Estrada on track to make his next start. CeCe Sabathia left with an ankle injury but is expected to make his next start. Michael Fulmer was not feeling well when he pitched yesterday, so he couldn't even make it through five innings. John Gray dealing with arm fatigue. You know, yesterday, Scott, those hot pitchers who have been on the most added list for a couple of weeks or however long, you got Fulmer, we'll excuse him, and it wasn't even a bad start for him. Shoemaker did pretty well, but for the second time in three or four starts, gave up some runs late in the game that made his line look a little worse than it should have been, but still pitching well.
Yeah.
But Sabathia, John Gray, and Danny Duffy took some steps back yesterday. Is there anything that concerns you with those three guys? Anything in particular?
Well, obviously the injury, Sabathia is an ankle, so okay, he twisted his ankle, no big deal. But with Gray, I don't even know, you said arm fatigue, I heard it described as heavy arm, not even sure what that really means. It reminds me of like when you wake up in the middle of the night and you can't feel your arm.
I hate that.
Yeah. You have those moments of panic where you're sure that it's never going to come back, but of course it always does.
The first time in a person's life that that happens and you don't know what, like, you're not prepared for that. I'm going to have to, when I have kids, I'm going to have to teach them, hey, there's going to be a day where you wake up and you can't feel your arm for like 10 seconds. It's perfectly normal. You'll be fine.
These are the things you're preparing to warn them about. The dead arm. I mean, you start thinking like amputation and stuff, right?
Well,
like,
no, I'm not.
Gosh, how am I going to go the rest of my life without my left arm?
Sure, I'll play along. Absolutely. That's the first thing that...
Well, I mean, this is all happening in a matter of seconds, of course. Right. Thoughts racing through your head, but...
Yeah, so it's... Yeah. It's how quickly can I get to the phone to dial 911 is usually what I'm thinking. But yeah, with Gray, I mean, are you willing to drop John Gray?
No. No, I'm not. Obviously, if this injury situation develops into more than just the mysterious dead arm, or sorry, heavy arm, then maybe. Duffy concerns me to the point of maybe dropping him, though. In a non-SPARP situation, he's beginning to remind me of Adam Conley, where he can just be electric at times, but has trouble getting through the lineup even a second time, much less a third. And, you know, it's kind of fitting that he did this on a day when Adam Conley was his better self, 8 shutout innings against the Braves. But A, it was against the Braves, and B,
4Ks.
It was what, his 6th quality start in 15? So... Yeah, I worry about that same situation with Duffy. Like you said, 4Ks. Sorry, talked over you there.
No, that's okay. I thought you were fishing for that stat. But Danny Duffy is owned in more leagues than Adam Conley on CBSSports.com, and he threw 103 pitches, but he did it in 4 2/3.
Yeah.
So that was, who would you rather have, Duffy or Conley?
Well, probably Duffy, because right now I'm just seeing some of the same tendencies for him as Conley. And like I said, relief pitcher eligibility is still a big deal in points leagues. Don't know that I could justify dropping him there.
Yeah. All right, Julio Urías has perhaps only one start left this season. Can you justify dropping Julio Urías?
I think so, because even though it seems like every week they're saying, okay, we're going to add another start on to how many he's getting, none of the starts have gone enough for a quality start, and you can't be a useful fantasy option if that's the case.
Yeah, but I am pretty encouraged, you know, in my keeper league where I have him. And what also is good news for you in keeper leagues, if you have Julio Urías, there's a good chance he gets sent down. And we prefer that because we want to put him in that little NA slot or that minor slot and not just have him sitting on our bench all year. So let's send him down.
I would be very encouraged by the actual performance here. In fact, it might be a good time to buy low on Urías in a dynasty or long-term keeper format, because they've been kind of the owner may be underwhelmed by the immediate production, but the ratios look good.
Let's file this under the for some reason category. Actually, it makes sense. But Baltimore, apparently, according to Fox Sports, is interested in Francisco Liriano. Anthony Rizzo left with back stiffness. Miguel Montero hurt his knee. He was replaced by Wilson Contreras, but his knee is apparently okay. But again, Contreras should be definitely on your radar. He is the most added player in CBSSports.com leagues. Yasiel Puig had a very Yasiel Puig-like play to end last night's game against the Washington Nationals. He hits a single with a runner on first base. The ball gets under Michael Taylor's glove, rolls way past him in the outfield, and both runners score. Puig scores on a single and a three-base error, runs through a stop sign at third base, dives from about 30 feet away into home plate. He said he was listening to his hamstring, which he, you know, just came back from the hamstring injury. It was a wild play and a bad night for Taylor, but I guess it was good that Puig looked good on that play running the bases. Because they are concerned about, you know, that hamstring.
Yeah.
But whatever. Sean Kelly ended up blowing the save, but he gave up two singles and, you know, not a terrible outing for him. Giancarlo Stanton sat after a bad game on Tuesday, so I don't know if they're fully back to trusting him yet.
Mm.
That was weird. Byung-ho Park will only start against, will only start when the matchup is right for Minnesota, and my phone called him Buying-ho Park instead of Byung-ho Park, but my phone should have called him Selling Ho Park.
Yeah, or Dropping.
Dropping Ho Park.
Yeah.
How about this? Another autocorrect for Albert Pujols. Yesterday he was Albert Pimples. Today he's Albert Pupils, and he's still day-to-day with a hamstring injury for now, but that could change.
Well, at least it's, you know, it's learning. It knows you didn't like Pimples for that injury, so it tried something else.
Albert Pupils.
Yeah.
Jeremy Jeffress was out with an eye infection. Tyler Thornburg got the save. Fernando Rodney is appealing a scoring decision. He has only given up one earned run all year, and he's appealing it. He thinks it should have been an error. And here's a cool stat.
Cry baby.
Yeah, I know, right? Ryan Dull has inherited 30 base runners for the A's this year, and he has not allowed one of them to score. 30?
Wow.
Yeah, doing great.
Good situation already there.
We're almost up to our Ask God Anything segment. First, though, let's get out the drop-o-meter. 0 to 10. 0, no way am I dropping this guy. 10, I dropped him a week ago. Lance McCullers, 90% owned, drop-o-meter.
Let's say about a 7.
Yeah?
Yeah. The strikeout rate's been great. And so I'd like to hold on to that potential if I could, you know, if I wasn't desperate for that roster spot. But there just hasn't been anything usable from him yet because he's walking so many hitters.
Would you rather have McCullers or Zach Davies?
McCullers.
McCullers or Tom Kohler?
McCullers.
Okay.
Maybe it's a 6.
Jay Happ, 0 to 10.
Well, he's more droppable than McCullers. I'll go 8 on Hap. I think, even though this was one of his best strikeout games of the year, 8 and 5 innings, we've kind of seen the lack of strikeouts catch up to him more recently. He's given him home runs. The ERA's up over 350 now. And, for a non-strikeout pitcher, that's not getting it done. Good one lost record, but that's going to change.
Hisashi Iwakuma, who, you know, before last night was going 7 innings every time out for 5 straight starts, but wasn't really doing all that well, and got crushed at Detroit. Iwakuma's 89% owned, 0 to 10.
I'll go 7 right between Happ and McHugh. And
McCullers.
I don't know. He has home run issues as well. He's on pace to give up 38.
Yeah.
It's just, you know, Happ. We've only seen Happ good as a strikeout pitcher with Pittsburgh at the end of last season. Every other form of Happ has just been unusable in fantasy. So I feel like Iwakuma, being the amazing control pitcher he is, he can withstand this a little better and at least give you consistent innings.
And finally, Francisco Liriano, 0 to 10 on Liriano, who is 82% owned.
Hold on, Scott.
Keep in mind, if not all of them, most of them are 2-star pitchers. McCullers, Happ, Iwakuma, and Liriano next week. So that is something to keep in mind.
I mean, Liriana's the one I'd be least likely to start. I'm tempted to go nine here, but I know if somebody dropped Liriano and I still had Hap on my roster, I'd probably drop Hap for Liriano just because I do feel like the upside is there for Liriano. And if anybody's going to get him right, it's Ray Searidge, but he has been all over the place all season. Really reminds me of the way his Twins career ended, where he was just exciting and you knew how much potential he had, but he was unusable because he was so wild.
Now, I said four pitchers here: McCullers, Hap, Iwakuma, and Liriano. McCullers is a one-start pitcher. The other three are two-star pitchers, but I don't know that you're going to start any of them. Hap is at Colorado and home against Cleveland, so you're not starting him.
No.
Liriano has the Dodgers at home and Oakland on the road. Those aren't bad matchups. He's just been so bad.
Yeah.
And Iwakuma has Pittsburgh and Baltimore at home. So
that's not so great either.
No, it's not. Hey, Matt Harvey is looking for a shot at redemption tonight on FanDuel. He's at Atlanta. Now, last week when he was hosting Atlanta, you know, he was a trendy FanDuel play, and he did not deliver. But he's much cheaper than John Lester. What about Matt Whistler against the Mets? Might have to be him. Now, light schedule tonight in FanDuel if you're just playing the night slate, so you need to spend wisely. There's a lot of FanDuel strategy to consider. Fewer games means fewer cheap hitters, so you might want to find a cheap pitcher like Whistler. So every day it's a different challenge on FanDuel. What a cool way to play fantasy baseball. Every single day you can play with a new team in a new contest, a new chance to win some money on FanDuel.com. Now, new users can sign up and use our promo code HOMERUN, one word, HOMERUN, no spaces. Enter your first league, either win a cash prize in that league, or FanDuel will automatically refund your entry fee up to $10 for additional play. Go to FanDuel.com, click the microphone in the upper right-hand corner, and sign up. That promo code is HOMERUN. Who is Scott White? Let's find out. Ask Scott anything. All right.
Anything. Anything.
A lot of fantasy baseball here, but also some fun stuff. Andrew Taylor wants to know, would you sell high on Michael Fulmer? Is there an innings limit this year?
Yeah, there is an innings limit. I don't think it's a hard limit, but he threw less than 130 last year, I want to say. So they're talking about maybe skipping some starts throughout the second half so that he's available through the end of the season. Selling high. It might be tricky since he was such a recent pickup off the waiver wire, but maybe if like Marco Estrada, if I could get him for Fulmer, I'd do that.
Fulmer's good.
Yeah.
He's good. You're pretty much buying it, right? I mean, innings
yeah, in terms
aside.
The performance, since he added that third pitch, a changeup, he has been a different pitcher
and
a really good one. So yeah, I buy it.
Chris Swick, buddy of ours, said if Scott could pick any member of the podcast as his tag team partner in a wrestling match, who would he choose and why?
I would choose Heath.
Of course.
I mean, he knows the most about wrestling, first of all.
Right.
His son's really into it. But his limbs are so long that I think he could, like... I mean, mine are too. We'd be like the super stretch team where we could just like pin an opponent on like length alone.
Okay. Yeah. Yeah. You might lose to like a team with a little bit more girth, but
well, here's the thing. I think length can. I think we could stop them.
You think you're going to put your hand out on the guy's forehead and he's going to flail his arms and not be able to hit you, basically, is what's going to happen.
That might be what happens, yeah.
Yeah.
Or it could be like a boa constrictor move, basically, where, yeah, he has a lot more power, he has a lot more weight, but if he can't move his limbs, he's not going anywhere.
Okay.
Yeah.
I'm trying to think of a great acronym here. But it's a little inappropriate, so I'm just going to skip it.
Well, we were talking about length and girth, and I got uncomfortable. So.
I'm just going to skip it. Next tweet is from Can't Win with Phil. I don't know if that is a reference to a guy named Phil or Phil Jackson, but Wow, I'm a Knicks fan. Yesterday was a crazy day. Tulo is showing life, says Can't Win with Phil. Would you rather have Tulo or guys like Tim Anderson or Profar rest of the season?
Oh, Tulo. It's not even close. I mean, at least give me like an Aledmys Diaz to compare him to, somebody who's shown us something worthwhile this year. Okay. You got to go with the track record.
I will then. Forget that stupid question. How about Tulo or Aledmys Diaz?
I'll take Tulo at this point. I mean, Aledmys Diaz finally homered yesterday, but it was his first extra base hit in like 2.5 weeks. I'm not sure how much we can really buy into what he was doing earlier in the year. I liked it at the time, but there's not a lot to support it either. So I will continue to trust in the track record of Tulo, at least when there's so little to lose by comparison.
Jeffrey Burgess wants to know what your favorite movie snacks are, popcorn or candy, and if candy, it's the fruity candies or the chocolate candies?
I mean, I'll eat any of it. Probably popcorn's my favorite, but my candy of choice for going to the movies is...
Sour gummy worms for you.
They're up there. Okay. They might be second. Actually, even more than those are like the sour watermelon slices. Or watermelon wedges, whatever. But Reason. You know Reason?
I don't think I've ever had those.
They're amazing. And the thing about it is, like, they're so chewy that, like, you can be working on the same one for 10 minutes. So it lasts. It lasts for a good portion of the movie. Because, you know, a lot of times you go to a movie and you're just kind of waiting for it to start, and before you know it, your popcorn's like 3/4 gone, you know?
Yeah, I know. But I wouldn't want to be sitting next to the guy who's chewing on his Reasons for for 10 minutes. For me, it'd be Raisinets. But, you know, okay. The thing about Raisinets, you talk about making things last. They give you the box, and inside the box, there's like a bag. And inside the bag, there's like 13 Raisinets in this big box. It's pathetic, the amount that they give you. In the box, it's not just that candy. M&M's, you buy M&M's at the movie theater. Like a quarter of the box is M&M's.
Yeah.
Waste of cardboard. Connor Sullivan wants to know why. I'm sorry. Would you like to talk about candy?
The Icy. That might be the best thing.
The what?
Icy. I-C-E-E.
Is that like an icy thing?
No, like it's, you know, the frozen drink.
Oh, like, oh God, no.
No?
No.
What's wrong with it?
I don't know. I've never
had it.
Delicious.
You need to broaden your horizons, sir.
I am the guy who gets the same thing every single time, everywhere I go.
So, yeah.
Yeah. I know what I like. All right. Connor Sullivan wants to know why Addison Russell is ranked over Scope and Profar.
Well, Profar doesn't play enough, so that's pretty easy. Scope. I guess that maybe I need to look at that. In Roto, I think it's fair to say Scope should rank ahead of Russell, but he's another one of those never walk guys. And in points leagues, that's obviously a limitation right there. And if it makes me worry that it makes me wary of overrating him when he's in the middle of a hot streak like this, because when he cools off, he's going to have stretches where he just gives you absolutely nothing.
Yeah, but I mean,
I'm gonna hold out a little hope for Addison Russell still, particularly with the he's shown better play discipline, and he gets to play a lot. So hold out a little hope for him.
Matt Pickle wants to know what you think about this. He said, "I'm about to name my son Everett. He's due in a month. I know your son is named Everett as well. Are you cool with that?"
I don't want it to become that common of a name, but this is only the third Everett I've heard of who I didn't already know about since he was born. So that's, I mean, it's kind of cool that you'll always have that association.
You're a trendsetter. You name,
yeah.
Yeah. Go for it, Matt. Jimmy, his question is, first he says, "Dear Eiffel, Sears, and Chris."
No idea.
Towers.
Oh, stupid.
Rank these three outfielders rest of season. Starlin Marte, Andrew McCutchen, Gregory Polanco.
McCutcheon, Polanco, Marte.
Really?
Probably flip Marte and Polanco in Roto, because Marte gives you the steals that are so scarce. But yeah, I'm still putting McCutcheon first.
Hmm. Okay. It's troubling to see yesterday they have a big game. They score six runs. They get to Samardzija, Gong homers, Polanco homers. McCutcheon goes, I think, 1-for-4 with a single. He's just been awful.
I know.
All right, faith. I know. Keep the faith.
I mean, he's been so consistent over the years. I'd hate to give up on him too soon.
Joe Pignataro wants you to rank your top five second-half bounce-back players or your top five second-half rookie call-ups. Why don't we do top three? I'll make it easy on you, Scott. Bounce-backs or call-ups?
Okay, so I guess...
McCutcheon?
McCutcheon might be... If I'm still ranking him that high, I don't mean to be boring and repetitive, but McCutcheon, Stanton, I'm pretty confident in him living up to his potential, and maybe a pitcher. Let's say, I'm trying to open my rankings here so I have a list to work off of.
Carrasco, Archer.
Is that enough of a bounce back? Has Carrasco been bad enough that we need him to bounce back?
No,
certainly
I mean,
I have faith
I wouldn't
in
call,
him.
I wouldn't call Carrasco bad, but
yeah,
mediocre.
Maybe. Gosh, this is terrible. Let's say Gerrit Cole. He gets healthy and he gets back to being what we drafted him to be. I feel good about that.
Alrighty. Michael, what's with the ridiculous man crush you have on Matt Moore, Scott? Care to tell me what you see that I don't? Peripherals are very mediocre for Matt Moore.
Well, I don't know. This seems like odd timing for this question, because did you see his last two starts? They were brilliant. And I think he has the potential to do that more consistently. It's not just me who thinks that, by the way. And when he was coming up through the minors, 2012, the last year he was rated by Baseball America, he was the number two overall prospect between Mike Trout and Bryce Harper. And that should be all I need to say. I mean, that speaks volumes of his potential. And to start out his career, I think everybody was pretty satisfied with what he was doing. We wanted him to walk fewer batters, but okay, he was getting strikeouts. He was a good fantasy option. And then he had Tommy John surgery, and okay, he's had a kind of a bumpy return from that, but still a lot of potential. And the last two starts show that. Are something to build off of.
I would sell Matt Moore to Scott White instantly. I think he might be kind of like Odorizzi and Smiley, and he's just going to be better at home. And those last two starts were home starts. He's got a 4.14 ERA at home. He's got a 6.35 ERA on the road in only five starts. So, yeah, those last two starts were great, but if somebody's buying in, there's been a lot more bad than good for Matt Moore. You can have
him. We have to talk about, I mean, what buying in exactly means. I dropped them in several leagues before two starts ago. So we're talking about a fringe option. I just think among the fringe options, he has some of the highest upside. He's like 60th in my rankings. Yeah. So I don't know that there's a scenario where I would really trade for him outside of a deep league.
Man, we talked about all these pitchers so far today, like Sabathia and Duffy and whatever. It's like, who are you dropping them for? In anything deeper than a 10-team league, what is out there at starting pitcher? It's just, there's one guy, actually. There's Daniel Mengden that I saw picked up in our podcast league. He's probably a two-star pitcher next week, I can confirm.
Yeah.
He is. He's got the Giants on the road and the Pirates at home. But it's just like, it's hard to justify dropping. Like, yeah, if Matt Moore were out there, I don't really believe that strongly in Matt Moore, but if he were out there, I'd pick him up. Because... it's just pitching is tough this year. I think for most teams, pitching is probably a struggle. You agree?
It's tough. There are 36 options I feel good about. We talked about that the last time I was on. Marco Estrada rounds out that list of 36. Everything beyond that, I feel like, is just wild guessing.
Yeah.
And there are some players that I feel better guessing about than others. I guess Matt Moore would be on the higher end of that list, but as in terms of like, who are you dropping? What, Sabathia for? Is that what you were asking about? Sabathia's 76% owned. So, I mean, look at who's owned in fewer leagues than him. John Gray is.
Yeah, see, it's like 72% owned. It's basically the same. All right, look.
Moore himself is.
This is my point. I'm looking at our 12-team head-to-head points league, okay? It's a standard league. You start five starting pitchers, two relievers. You have a five-man bench. Yeah. These are the best pitchers to date that are available, that are free agents.
Okay.
Mike Leake, Martin Perez, Dan Straley, Jimmy Nelson, Mike Fiers, Ricky Nolasco, Jonathan Neese, Tom Kohler. You know, there's Hector Santiago, there's Jared Weaver, there's guys like that. I mean, it's not a year where you're just going to go to the waiver wire and pick up these great starting pitchers. So if there's anybody with some upside, you gotta keep them.
No, that's fair. But at the same time, we're talking, though, that league is especially plugged in. They're the podcast listeners league. They're listening to us consistently. They're probably a step or two ahead of most leagues. You got a guy like Archie Bradley, who is owned in that league, I'm sure, but he's only 51% owned overall.
Okay,
and
yeah,
he has shown plenty of potential since getting recalled.
Yeah, that's a
lot of strikeouts. So that's somebody I'd drop Sabathia for.
Oh, I don't know about that. Because he's getting a lot of strikeouts. What else is he doing? He's like Sabathia. Gosh, I mean, the numbers, I know you know them, but I'll just give them out anyway because they're amazing. His previous seven starts, Sabathia was 4-2 with a 0.82 ERA. So right. I don't know that I drop him for Bradley.
It gets back to the, like, what do you trust more? The incoming prospect who's been hyped for a long time, or the broken down veteran who's trying to reinvent himself, like which makes for the better fantasy asset? And I would say the former. Now, maybe Sabathia is close to the point where we can classify him as something other than that, but that's still how I'm viewing him.
By the way, I am a little concerned about the ankle because, you know, this guy, he's had a knee injury last year and pitched very poorly with it. So I don't think we can just, like, you know, shoo it off. It could make a difference just with his delivery. Anyway, I want to finish up Ask Scott Anything with a few more from Trevor. Okay. Scott, is your wife a little bit embarrassed about her husband's profession? What does she tell her friends when they ask what you do?
Why would she be embarrassed about my profession? I don't think this is a...
Does she say, oh, he's a baseball writer? Or does she say, he's a fantasy baseball writer?
Well, she probably says he's a baseball writer because people who don't play fantasy baseball or like it's kind of surprising because you think, you know, fantasy football seems to be so widespread, but you tell people you're a fantasy writer, you tell them you're a fantasy writer, they think you're talking about something else, but you tell them you're a fantasy baseball writer and, they seem confused by that. They don't have a grasp for what that is. Like what would people read in relation to that? Mm. So it's easier just to tell them baseball writer, which is basically what it is. You're just kind of narrowing your focus a little.
Mm-hmm. He's a reporter. That's
just yeah. No, she's, I think she's proud of what I do. I'm a professional writer. I mean, that's a cool thing. Getting paid to do that. Not many people do.
Yeah, it's pretty cool. I don't. All right, why is Trout, this is from JM515, why is Trout not ranked above Harper? Trout consistently great, Harper one great year, not so great this year, hashtag ask Scott. Yeah, Scott.
I don't know. I think he's been better this year than you're giving him credit for, first of all.
Well,
Trout has been even better.
Yeah, that's the point.
But... I think the ways Harper is underachieved are unsustainable in a good way. So I think that batting average is about to go up and the power rate, the home run rate's about to go up. And I still just like the complete package of skills better than I do Trout's.
Okay. And finally from Bobby, who is a better TV boss, Michael Scott or Ron Swanson?
Oh, I got it. Ron Swanson.
No, are you kidding?
Easily. Yeah.
That's insane.
Because Ron Swanson wants you to perform poorly. Like, That's kind of his incentive.
All right. If you're being like literal with as a boss, that's one thing. But if you're talking about a better character on TV, Michael Scott is one of the greatest TV characters of all time. There's no doubt about that.
Well, I can't dispute that claim, but I'm not sure Ron Swanson isn't.
Come on.
Ron Swanson appealed to me more personally, I think, than Michael Scott did. Ron Swanson was my favorite part of Parks and Rec. He was the reason I watched Parks and Rec.
He's not even the main character, though.
So? Doesn't mean he's not a great character.
Oh, he is great, but he ain't Michael Scott.
I mean, Cosmo Kramer wasn't the main character of Seinfeld, but everybody knows who he is.
Very, you know what? You know what, Scott? That's an obnoxious answer, and you got me on that technicality. Good for you. That's the end of Ask Scott Anything. All right, let's fly through the rest of the show. We got a late start today, so we're going to cut it off a little bit early today. I'll give you a FanDuel lineup at the very end, but three up from yesterday. All right, this is the third straight day we've talked about him, but Carlos Beltran hit a three-run homer, and I just want to bring this up. After the All-Star break last year, this was Beltran's slash line. 292, 364, 513 with 12 home runs in 67 games. This year, 286, 323, 573. So he's not walking as much, but he's hitting a lot of home runs. But the bottom line is you're talking about an OPS around like 860 to 900 over the past almost year, like 130-something games, 135 games. And the home road splits are not really that crazy. He's still done pretty well on the road in that stretch. So is Carlos Beltran not going to be a complete victim of a trade out of Yankee Stadium? And is he maybe a little underrated in fantasy?
Well, what's his ownership?
Oh, he's
he may be a little underrated by me because I have given him very little credit, him being a 38-year-old who was so evidently on the decline before last year's second half. A 39-year-old, actually. He's 95% owned, 81% started.
But people aren't really buying it. You know, that's what I'm saying. Like, they don't think this is going to last for Carlos Beltran.
I think I'm there with them. I don't, just because he's so old, and I mean, if nothing else, you expect an injury to happen at some point. I would be reluctant to hold him if somebody made me a fair offer for him.
All right, Scooter Gennett, 14% owned. He's hitting pretty well. He homered yesterday, two home runs in his last three games, but just overall, last 19 games or so, batting well over 300, and all season long, hitting well against lefties. So, Gennett, is he under-owned at 14%?
I would say not. I mean, second base is pretty deep, and yeah, just not enough power, not enough speed, just not enough of a skill set, and not a clear enough... Not enough at bats, really, in the long run, probably.
All right, Nick Hundley homered yesterday. So we go from three up to three down. Wellington Castillo is one of our three down. He's 84% owned, and he has two home runs since May 1st. Six walks, 35 strikeouts. He's had one good week, basically. Would you drop Wellington Castillo for Nick Hundley?
Yes, I would. Now, Hundley's playing time has been inconsistent since he returned from the DL. Only started 12 of 18 games, but when you homer in the last two of them, I mean, Troy Walters, what's he good for, you know?
Yeah, exactly. And Hundley was, I think, the number seven catcher in Roto last year, so keep that in mind. Not as good in points. We'll talk about Eric Hosmer and Stephen Piscotty tomorrow. Do you have any concerns about Jeff Samardzija, who's been roughed up a little bit, only one quality start in his last five starts, and yesterday was particularly bad?
I'm a little concerned because innings is such a critical part of his value, and he's obviously there was a complete game mixed in there that makes it look better. But yeah, it's been a bumpy stretch of five starts here. I think just how good he was at the start of the year and how bad starting pitcher has been as a whole, I don't know that I'm looking to dump him all of a sudden, but I'm a little concerned if I own him, sure.
All right, that's Samardzija. I'm going to give you five or six starting pitchers, and you tell me who your two favorites are from this list. Adam Conley, Archie Bradley, Eduardo Rodriguez, Dan Straley, Daniel Megden, and Junior Guerra.
Run through them again?
Yeah. Conley, Archie Bradley, Eduardo Rodriguez, Dan Straley, Daniel Megden, and Junior Guerra.
Bradley's the clear favorite. I think he has the most upside, and I think he's demonstrated the most. But I'm intrigued by Mengden because he has had such a high strikeout rate in the three starts since he came up. And that was, you know, he was known for more for throwing strikes and dominating the opposition that way in the minors. So he's kind of, I'm not sure we've seen the best of him in that one area yet. And I've been impressed by what we have seen. So. And he had like a 150 ERA before getting called up. I think we may be sleeping on this Mengden guy a little.
Yeah, all right. It was all that prospect fatigue. He just came up at a time when people were sick of it.
Well, he wasn't that high end of a prospect, so I don't know. He's just kind of fun because he has, you know, that handlebar mustache and that throwback herky-jerky delivery. It just seems like that kind of overshadows what he's actually done, too.
And in the bullpen, Will Harris struggled a little bit. He got the save, gave up three hits. His second shaky save in his last five. Meanwhile, Luke Gregerson, last six appearances for Gregerson, 5 2/3, no hits, one walk, 10 strikeouts. Do you think Gregerson could get that job back?
I think he could, but I think Harris would need to really fall off too. And the way he's done dating back to last year, I'm not confident that's going to happen.
Okay, Scott. So in terms of FanDuel tonight, you know, it's a very short slate, so it's just pretty impossible to get John Lester in your lineup. He's clearly the best pitcher, but he is 9,500. Tim Lincecum is number two at 7,900. No, thank you.
No way.
Wei-Yin Chen is number three. Oh, no. Oh, wow. I'm sorry. I was... Okay. Let's start over. John Lester is number one. He's 11,400. Then Zach Greinke is number two, 9,900, but he's at Colorado. Then Matt Harvey's number three at 9,500. Then it's Lincecum at four, followed by Chen, followed by my guy, Matt Whistler. My lineup is Whistler. And then I just want to get as many Rockies and Diamondbacks as possible, but the problem is you got to wait till the lineups come out. Whistler, Nick Hundley, Paul Goldschmidt, Ben Zobrist. He has great numbers against Wei-Yin Chen. He's probably going to lead off tonight for the Cubs, and he's only 3,200, so he's a must. Jake Lamb at 4,600. Third base is very tough tonight. Nick Ahmed, 2,800. So just trying to get a diamond back in there. Peter O'Brien, 3,100. He's made for Coors Field. And I have Billy Burns going up against Tim Lincecum. Not excited about that. And Melvin Upton Jr. at 3,100. He is very good against lefties. He is facing one tonight. So there are another guy that you could think about is Socrates Brito. He's 2,600, but I don't know if he's going to play. So you have to check that out. If you have a lot of money, Carlos Gonzalez has great numbers against Greinke. He's 4,100. And Wilson Contreras. Wilson Contreras would be a favorite play of mine if he's in the lineup at $2,500, which is very possible. You could save some money downgrading from Nick Hundley at 3,000 to Wilson Contreras. And that's going to do it for Fantasy Baseball Today. Scott, wow. Big show from you today. You delivered. Thank you.
Happy to do it, Adam.
Yeah.
You know, you and I have been together the longest of all of
it's
these
true.
People.
Yeah, we've had that chemistry.
Yeah.
Screw those other guys. I think that's what you were trying to say.
This is all we need.
That's Scott White. I'm Adam Azer. We'll be back tomorrow. Not that many games, so we'll have a little fun tomorrow. Maybe do the feud, something like that. Stick around for it. See you later.